First off, I'm Dave, I'm with Holly, and you are listening to the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
Hey, Dave.
What is happening?
I do not know.
You do
I
not know. I do. I do know. Maybe a month or so ago, you mentioned, actually probably longer, you mentioned that you had a friend who was a drummer, and she's in this AC/DC tribute band. Like, oh, that's cool. Maybe we should, maybe one day we'll get her on the podcast. And then I don't know what happened, but it came to pass that you happened to say, oh yeah, she used to be in the Pandoras. And then I went, what? The Pandoras? Because in the mid-80s, that was like right in my wheelhouse. I loved that whole Paisley Park scene, or Paisley Underground scene. And I was listening to Rodney, and of course, I kind of became a fan of theirs. And so now you mentioned, who do we have now? What's going on here? We've got an...
I'm glad you were, thank you for that. I'm glad you were stalking my Facebook. So we have three of the Pandoras. We have Sherry Weinstein, who was the drummer. We have Karen Bassett, who was, I think you were the bassist, but you also played drums, didn't you?
I played drums, yeah, from 84 to 87. And then Sherry took over after that.
Yeah. And we have Melanie Vammon, who was a keyboardist from the Pandoras, and also other bands. They've all played in other bands, but we will get to that. So we're thrilled to have you on What Difference Does It Make? Thank you, guys.
Yes, welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. This is great.
Sherry's here.
Yeah, you guys already talked about Sherry first.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't say hi yet, though. Hi.
Hi.
I should say this is the first time we've interviewed multiple people at once, and doing this through Zoom is going to be a little weird. If you have something to say, raise your hand, and we'll recognize you.
No, not necessarily. They've played in a band together. I'm sure they know how to, you know, like we do. We try not to talk over each other, right?
Okay. We always talk over each other.
Yeah, we do.
We're famous for that.
Well, then...
I have heard some of those interviews because I was listening. Actually, I started getting nightmares because I heard you interview. You were on some college radio station in San Jose. I think Sherry's kind of like the documentarian of all things Pandora, and she posted a number of things. And one of them was an interview with this kid in college, and everyone's talking over each other, and this poor kid's trying to control this situation. I guess you kind of got a feel of what was going on, you know, with the Pandoras on the road and what it was like to be on. How'd you travel from place to place? Did you have the Pandora van, or was it a bus, or what was your mode of transportation?
So let me start by saying there were different eras of the band. I was in the band, this is Sherry speaking, from 87 to 90. So I can only speak for my era of the band. We toured in anything from a van to a motorhome that was nicknamed Moho. Karen's era, she can speak for that from their tours. Melanie was in all eras, well, most eras.
We should set that first. I should have done that already. Sherry, you were in the later part of the '80s, 87 to 90, right?
Yes.
Correct. Yeah. Melanie, you were early on. What year?
Me and Karen joined in 1984, and then I was in the band until basically the end in the 90s, and then in the reformed Pandoras as well until, you
okay.
know. Now.
Okay, so when we say you joined the band, the leader of this band is Paula Pierce, and so how did you meet Paula initially?
So I met Paula... I knew her around the music scene when I was in high school. I joined the Pandoras when I was in high school. And Karen, I met at the same time because Paula was doing a changeover with new members right when that first album came out. Basically, we joined like the eve of that release. And that's how I met Karen, because she tried her out for drums, and she knew me around the scene and asked me to try out for keyboards.
I met Melanie at her audition at the Pandoras in a garage in Whittier where we were rehearsing. And
yeah.
we had Julie and myself, and then Melanie joined, and that was the band for like a year. Prior to that,
ten months. It was that version of the band until Kim joined. 10 months.
Uh-huh. And prior to that was the very original lineup, was the with Paula and the band who recorded the Pink album, which they broke up when that album came out. They just fell apart, and Paula reformed the band. And I got a phone call. I was in another band, and I was playing at Madame Wong's East. And I actually got fired in the parking lot from that band. But the bass player in the band I was in, she said, "Hey, my buddy, my brother, her brother was Chuck Wagon from the, you know, Chuck Wagon, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Explain Chuck Wagon to us.
Well, I mean, I didn't know him. I knew his brother because I was in a band with her. She was a bass player, Pat Davis. And she knew from her brother that Paula was looking for a whole new lineup. And so she gave me Paula's number in the parking lot that night. And I called Paula, and then I met up with her at her apartment in Hollywood and gave me a copy of the record. And I also made a mixtape for me. I think she had a mixtape already of all this. I still have it somewhere, but a mixtape of like the influences that she had. And she says, do this and see if, you know. And I was actually looking to join as a guitar player, but she's like, I play guitar, but if you know, and I had played drums before, but I broke my collarbone surfing, and I was still kind of recovering from that. And I couldn't really play drums at the time, but she's like, oh, see if you can do it. You know, and I started practicing the songs, learning all this stuff. And I was like, I really dig this stuff. And I had heard them on Robbie's show. And so I already knew that, you know, that they were a band and they were getting played around locally on the radio and stuff like that. So I already was familiar with the music and liked it, but I wasn't familiar with influences, which is what was great about getting that mixtape from Paula. I really got a feel for all that stuff, because that wasn't part of my DNA, was the whole, you know, garage punk 60s thing. That wasn't part of my musical knowledge at the time. It is a big part of it now because of the Pandoras, but prior to that, I was like into Duran Duran and Billy Idol and the Go-Go's and the Bangles were just starting to happen and stuff. So those were all my big influences at the time. Anyway, enough about me.
No, actually, I am curious about the firing. What happened there? What was the band? And kind of elaborate on what.
I'm going to answer that.
Oh, okay. Wait, which firing? The firing of the band that led to me getting into the Pandoras?
Yeah, let's talk about, yeah.
And I'm going to answer that.
Okay.
Wait, I'll raise my...
What firing are you talking about?
how many firings do we have? All right, Melanie, go ahead.
He's talking about when we joined the band.
Go ahead.
Oh, early firing. The first line of firing.
Basically, the Pandoras formed in 1983. They played their first show in about February of 1983. And like I said, I knew Paula from around the 60s garage scene. And periodically through that time, as Paula would come up to me, she would get mad at them and ask me if I knew how to play an instrument. And she wasn't happy and some of them weren't happy. And they had already had a switch over about 6 months previous to Kieran and I joining Bambi. She had joined playing bass instead of Debbie Mendoza, however you say it. That's who formed the band, Paula and Debbie. And so then Bambi had joined, and Paula wasn't very happy about it. They'd be playing shows live, and stuff would happen. Her amp would break. You could tell she was miserable. I used to go to all the shows. And that's when she would come up to me and ask me, like, do you know how to play an instrument? So basically, Bambi quit the band. This is like right around the time, you know, and I can't speak completely for her, but the knowledge that I know of that, she wasn't happy with what was going on. So she quit. And then Paula wanted to get a different keyboard player. That's where she brought me in to try out. And Casey was thinking about if she was going to quit or not. And so Kieran had actually tried out, but Casey was still around trying to decide what to do. So then like there was like kind of like a switchover thing, and then bam, then Karen, Julie, and me came into the picture. So that's basically what happened.
What I have a question. This is Sherry for Melanie. What was the year that Gwen smashed the bottle on Paula's head?
1984.
All right. Well, now
maybe 85.
All right. Now you have to tell that story. Because we got to get.
I'm not going to tell that story.
Okay. Well, we got to get a sense of who Paula is.
Okay. So Paula started playing music when she was 14 years old. She played accordion, and Kim Fowley told her, "Hey, you need to start a band."
And Kim Fowley, of course, famously is he started up the Runaways, and correct?
Absolutely. Okay. And Paula just loved the Runaways. It was like her favorite band. And so Kim Fowley said, you know, you need to start a band. So Paula went out, she bought a Fender Mustang bass, and she started a band called The Rage with Don Williams. And that's where Paula got her start. And she was really young in the scene, and she started doing that. And then she started the Direct Hits, who then turned into the Action Now, and then started the Pandoras. So that's like where hers, but she was always a part of the punk scene and the garage scene early on.
Any instrument, I mean, besides accordion, did she ever play any other instruments?
Well, she played accordion, and then she started playing bass, then she played guitar. She could play anything, really. She was good at, you know, I don't know so much about drums, but as far as like guitar, bass, harmonica, all that.
Piano. She could play piano too. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying. Yeah. I actually believe she played on the version of Haunted Beach Party on that first album. I believe that's Paula playing it.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
Playing bass?
I believe that is. That is what I always understood from her. And that was one of the first songs I learned when I tried out. So that was my understanding.
Did she play the keyboard?
On Haunted Beach Party, yes.
Did she already have the songs? Like when you were recording something, did she have everything fully formed or an idea in her head, or did she allow collaboration? Like you could bring in something. How did songs get formed within the band?
So Paula was the singer, the songwriter, and the band leader. And that was made known to all of us. She would have a song. She wrote all the songs. She'd bring it in, but she would let us elaborate on coming up with our parts, our style, our thing. So basically she would bring it in, and I think that both of them can agree to that. Here's the song. She'd play us like a 4-track demo of it, and then we would kind of just do our thing and go with it.
Yeah, she would have, I mean, drum-wise, in my era at least, she would have specific ideas where she'd say like, oh, like certain songs. Like I remember when she brought in Close Behind, and I did the tom-tom, the floor tom part in the kind of pre-chorus thing. She's like, yeah, do that. It's like Cheap Trick. It's like the Cheap Trick part. She would let us kind of elaborate our parts, just like you said, Melanie. I mean, but she'd have certain parts. She'd have specific things.
Yeah.
Drum-wise. She'd even like, she could even go like, do this, like boom, boom, ba, boom, boom. She'd kind of sing it and let you elaborate. But she definitely had a vision in her head.
Yeah, that was my experience too, is on certain songs, she really had a definite idea and she would just air drum it. You know, like on You Don't Satisfy, it's not a typical drum beat. It's all snares. Da 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 ba ba. She was very specific about certain things. Other things she would just kinda let us do, you know, throw our own style into it. But there were certain songs that she had sort of arranged in her head already, and she would give us each ideas of what she had in certain spots, but then we would run with that and do our own thing. So it was a collaboration, but she did have a pretty good idea of what she wanted the song to sound like overall. Often because, you know, it's really well known that she liked to, I don't want to say steal, but I guess copy other songs in a lot of ways, but make them her own. It was kind of a thing she did. I mean, she had the ability to write really great songs. I'm not sure why so many songs were so derivative. I think she thought that maybe people wouldn't be familiar with those songs that she borrowed from. because it was sort of that underground sort of punk thing that wasn't mainstream. But I mean, a lot of people have called her out on that over the years of, you know, this song sounds like this and that song sounds like that. And I didn't know they were kind of ripped off because, like I said earlier, that wasn't really in my DNA, all that stuff. I learned all this stuff after the fact that certain songs were, you know, lifted gently from other songs. But, you know, I mean, people loved us. It was all very cool, and we had that sound. We copied that sound, and some of the songs were derivative, but we did make them our own enough to people know our songs for us. That's pretty cool. I love that about it.
I think it's not being a musician myself, I think it would be hard not to. I mean, it's when you're influenced by a sound or an artist in particular, how do you not, you know, emulate it in some way? I know you're talking about direct song, you know, ripping off songs directly, but I think it's hard when you're influenced, you're influenced. And I think it would always come out in your music.
Oh yeah. And even the biggest artists definitely cop to, you know, having the Kinks or the Rolling Stones or whoever, as a major influence, and you hear it in their music. You really do. You hear even the riffs almost note for note in certain songs by famous artists who copy famous artists, and they put it into and they don't mind. The famous artist doesn't mind the other famous artist kind of lifting this and that. They're like honored. It's interesting how that
works. Isn't it the sincerest form of praise, right? What do you call it?
Sincerest form of flattery. Yeah.
Did Paula?
Here's one thing I'm going to say. Unfortunately for Paula was an amazing pop garage songwriter. She wrote amazing pop songs. The thing with her, though, she would kind of go with the trend of music, but she was always she was ahead of her time with the whole pop and garage 60s thing. Had she stuck in that? But then she jumped on the rock bandwagon, and she was always behind it. That wasn't really her thing. You know, had she stuck to writing those pop garage songs, I think she still would have been like way ahead of her time.
And, yep, I agree.
She switched often with who her boyfriend was and the thing that she was in, like the music and the scene that she was into at the time. And it was always like after the garage thing, it was always behind.
100%.
Was that,
you know, and that's sad because I feel had she stuck, you know, her songs could have been much more successful.
Do you think that was a confidence thing with her, or is it, was she driven? She wanted to find, to make the band rise to the next level. It's like, okay, this is what's happening now. This is what we have to do.
That is what she thought. Absolutely. That's exactly how she thought. And she thought she needed to do this. And this was the trend. This was the Hollywood, you know, like when she got into all the portions that I didn't like, that I was actually involved in until pretty much the end, but definitely not me and not my scene or my musical likes or anything like that. And because she wanted to be big, she thought that was, you know, going to get her there. And
she wasn't. She was very stubborn, very stubborn.
Yeah.
I mean, when it was that stuff, I remember saying, like, talking to her and saying, you know, K-Rock is our niche. Like, that's who's playing us. And she was
And we did have some success with K-Rock. Absolutely. Like, well, Rodney, from the beginning with Karen and I, he was, like, our number one supporter to this day. Rodney is incredible, and he's played every band I've ever been in. He's amazing. I love him. And he played Pandora's. And then through the years, you know, we were on K-Rock. We were on various different shows on K-Rock and hosted shows. And we had different songs. I think Stop Pretending probably was in a regular rotation on K-Rock. And I know in Sherry's era,
Close Behind was.
That was like in a big heavy rotation. So, you know, we did have K-Rock songs rotation.
Yeah.
Seems like a good time to take a break.
Yes, this is a good time. We're having a lot of fun here. It's kind of fun balancing three musicians and during an interview through Zoom, but we're doing well. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Welcome back. We're back with the Pandoras, Sherry, Melanie, and Karen. Yeah. How did you end up connecting with him to begin with Rodney?
Rodney finds you.
Colony Rodney since she was a little kid, since she was about 14 years old. And it was just a whole part of the music scene. That's where everybody, we all knew each other from the music scene, but I was a lot younger than Paula. So I wasn't there for any of that stuff, but that's where she met Rodney and the punk scene, I guess. And
yeah, you know,
and Rodney was always ahead of his time and finding all this cool new music to present to the world. And that's what happened.
Everybody ended up developing a relationship with him.
Yeah. I met Rodney when I was 16 because my friend we went to the old K-Rock building and she drove her single that she made. And I remember I sat on his lap and he played the single. Like I was like a little kid. And then we'd go visit him at Denny's.
On Sunset Strip. Yeah.
So I knew, I knew Rodney in a different way. So when I auditioned for the Pandoras, I had already seen the Pandoras many times with Karen's era, Karen and Melanie's era. I never saw the first lineup, but I saw the Julie Patchouli era before Kim, and then I saw the Kim era many times. I even saw there was a drummer briefly in the band before me after Karen was, that whole story of Karen being fired or Karen quitting, whatever happened. Then I was, next thing you know, I auditioned and I was in the band. And I had already seen them multiple times.
All right.
So when you, which was, I know we're, sorry, go ahead, Dan. I know we're jumping around.
No, that's quite all right. I guess we should talk about the look of the Pandoras. I don't know if it was like 60s thrift store look or how you would describe it. What was the shopping spree like, or how did you pick out clothes to wear for your shows? What was the process, and what was this Paula's vision, or was it up to each individual to kind of pick out their own style?
I'll go first. I was the Johnny Bravo. That was like part of me. I was like in the 60s garage scene, so that came easily to me. That was my whole style and my whole everything about me. So I just wore what I wore, and through the years, I made most of my clothes, and I would just come up with ideas. We'd have parties. All of us, Karen was there, Sherry, through the different eras. I personally would make up different design ideas and stuff and make these clothes, but we would all do it. Paula would do it. Kim did it a lot with me. There's tons of pictures of me and Kim with outfits that we made, but we would all go shopping together too. Oh my God, we'd have like the greatest shopping sprees. And I remember going to accessory stores, and Karen probably remembers that. Do you remember those accessory stores, like where you could get like all the bangle bracelets? Remember all those noisy rubber?
Yeah.
Things, and we'd go, I'm sure you were at some of those stores too, like we'd just go buy like all the junk jewelry all the time and fun like accessory type of shopping stuff.
Was this on Melrose, did you go, or any place that you would love?
I can remember, you know, I don't really remember so much thrift stores with Paula then, but like through the years with both Karen and Sherry, there were like stores out. Paula lived out in Chino. I can remember Chino, you know, what are all the secondhand stores? Like what are all those ones we used to go to in San Francisco, Sherry?
Oh, on Haight Ashbury Street.
I feel like we were always in like secondhand. Aardvark's. Oh yeah. Aardvark's. Aardvark's was huge for us. Probably Karen, Sherry, me, Kim, everybody. That was Jet Rag. Jet Rag.
Jet Rag.
Jet Rag came a little later. That's more like when me and Kim were in class, but
That was like the 90s.
Yeah, that was more 90s. Yeah, Melrose had cool stuff.
Hey, every time we go to San Francisco, we'd always go to the thrift stores and look for stuff. But then I kind of remember the thrift stores starting to smell like some of them. Oh, and in San Jose and in Campbell. And Melanie would always buy a lampshade on tour. I remember.
I would always buy a lampshade or a lamp.
Like a classic, like an old school.
Yes. I'd come home with a lampshade on the plane or like in the motorhome or like when I was in trains, I remember going to in Ohio, this cool place, and I came home with two Elvis lamps.
Do you still make your clothes?
No, but I did back then, like the more I'm thinking about it, we made all those outfits, like Stop Pretending. Those were all put together stuff we would like sew up, and for the most part.
And my era, we had, didn't we get stuff from like Lip Service, Drew from Lip Service? And then that lady, Terry made
Karen,
us clothes.
Karen was there for that. Karen got a lot. We had a clothes designer. Oh.
But I got something that I wore in the video that I remember we'd call her, we'd say, dress, dress, dress. Like we call some woman named Terry because she had her clothes. Is that possible?
Karen. That's Karen's with us, and she made some clothes, but still I made most all mine.
I still have my clothes in my closet to my left. Oh.
Yeah. You ever break them out? Oh.
I gave mine to a thrift store, unfortunately.
Oh.
I probably gave mine to a cleaning lady. My outfit from the Rundown Love Battery video. Someone made that for sure.
I made mine.
Sherry, your style was pretty rockin'.
So I was in the rock era. Yes. You know, it was.
What? Okay, so you.
I remember when I auditioned, I asked if I had to dress in a 60s costume. And everyone was like, no, we don't dress like that anymore. It was more like everybody had longer hair and like hair extensions.
Do you remember what you wore? You mentioned Rundown Love Battery. You played that on the Arsenio Hall show, right? Was that you?
Yeah, that was me.
What did you pick? What did you choose to wear for that? What was it?
I'd have to watch.
Okay.
I probably wore.
You can't see.
That's right.
That
was hilarious because I do remember there. You had so much smoke going on. They had no idea where the band was initially. In that video, it was crazy.
Yeah. So, well, there was like a makeup and a hair person, but I remember specifically Kim Shattuck would not let them do her makeup or hair. Melanie
didn't do mine either.
But right. Paula, and you guys look good in it. And
Paula's hair. Paula looks like little Paula, Bo Peep.
Paula looked like little Bo Peep. And they like teased my hair and made it very high hair. And like the color choices that they chose for me, ew.
Even then you thought,
and
ew?
I remember, yeah, I remember, God, what did I wear in that? Oh, I remember I had on these like arm things. I don't know. Probably wore the same shirt from the top from the Rundown Love Battery video, the professional video that we made in Orange County at a garage. Did you find that one, Dave?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I saw that. I remember I just saw the Arsenio.
There's lots of good video. There's lots of good videos I uploaded when the fan page started and before we reformed. I had uploaded all sorts of video footage, interviews from like all different eras. I was like on a kick for a while doing that.
Oh, there's great stuff.
There's really good stuff on there, but I haven't uploaded anything for a while.
Right. I want to talk about the reforming, but I also want to talk about Kim. I want you guys to talk a little bit about Kim.
Yeah, you keep talking about Kim Shattuck. Please, who wants to tell us a little bit about Kim?
Okay, so Kim came into the band. She joined the band in 1985 when we were looking for a new bass player. And I met her in a store in Orange Circle. I was with Roy McDonald and...
From Red Cross. Initially.
At the time he was in the Things.
Okay.
And I knew her boyfriend. He was in a band called The Fad. And we were shopping around and I hadn't really even thought about it because we didn't really know Kim. I had seen her around the clubs a little bit. And so we just had small talk and then Kim, I said, oh, we're looking for a bass player. But that was it. So we ended up in another store. And then because Kim's like to her boyfriend, why don't you tell them that I play bass? And he's like, but you don't play bass. and so we Roy and I ended up in the next store and he said, oh, she plays bass. I'm like, oh, really? And so I got her number and I came back and I told Paula and Karen. And so Paula's like, call her up. And I called her up and she came to my house. We used to rehearse up in my bedroom a lot. And Karen would sleep over there. It was in Orange County. So Kim came over to my house and the Paula, me, Karen, and Kim, we all played some songs together and we really liked her a lot. We liked her attitude, her style, and she was a lot of fun. And the thing was, we had this other girl that was filling in for a couple months. And so we had to figure out what to do basically to get her to leave. And she wasn't really right for the band, and it felt a little weird to us. And so we told Kim, we want you in the band, but we just have to like wait it out here. And so Kim actually, that night, Kim and I went out, and Kim and I became best friends instantly. It was like that night. That was it. And but Kim came to a show of ours at Madame Wong's West with this other girl and watched us, stood in the audience. And then,
what was her name? What was her name? Other girl?
Gail. She's on Facebook.
Right, Gail. Yeah. All right.
And so anyway, she did quit. And Kim, that was it. Kim joined. And then it was Paula, me, Karen, and Kim.
And wasn't Gail pregnant or something?
Well, we found that out all these years later on the fan page that Gail was pregnant at the time that she was in our band. And we didn't know it. Oh. It was like so weird. And there is, I have a picture of her playing live with us at the lingerie. But anyway, so Kim joined and then the four of us made Stop Pretending.
Wow. You said she didn't know how to play bass or the boyfriend said she didn't know how to play bass.
Kim played guitar. No, that was the first that she picked up a bass.
But
Kim was a natural musician. She had a great ear for harmonies. Once Kim joined the band, the whole harmony part of the band took it to another level because she had such a great ear for harmonies and for singing. I had been doing most of the harmony stuff and then Kim joined the band. And then when we went into the recording studio, it's like, she just nailed the parts so well. She took it to a whole nother level. And you know, Kim she played keyboard and piano growing up. She sang with her family growing up. So she really was a natural sort of musician. And so she just took to the bass like she'd always been playing it. And she was just a perfect fit. You know, she had the right look going on, and she had all the same influences that Paul and Melanie had music wise. She had her own thing going on too, but she just fit right in. It was just a perfect fit. And Kim was great. Kim was a great, great pal to hang out with. We hung out a lot outside of the band and just, you know, hanging out, doing crazy stuff, going to cemeteries, things like that late at night. So yeah, we had a lot of fun. It was a good time. It's one of my favorite times of my sort of like becoming an adult, was that band and these girls.
Oh my God. Hell yeah, it was. It's like we were babies. We were like teenagers. And I was a naive, believe it or not, naive little girl. And boy, did I learn a lot. When did I get corrupted?
I refer to that time as I didn't go to college. I went into the Pandoras, and those were my sorority sisters. Were these girls?
Yeah,
and I wouldn't trade that for anything in the world. I mean, look at how we are today. We're still friends,
absolutely,
and we're still even bandmates. So
we are. We're family.
Yeah.
It was the same in my era too. Kim, we always said we were band sisters. Like, I felt like I can't even express going on tour and all the fun memories. And then when we reformed, it was like Karen and I were instantly like that as well when we first reformed.
We're having a lot of fun with the Pandoras, but we're going to stop this episode right now, and we will return next week with more talk with our friends, the Pandoras.
Our thanks to Sherry, Melanie, and Karen for joining us. We are having a total blast.
Okay, until next week, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.